What's up, Atlanta? How's everybody doing on a Wednesday? We got a little shorty show tonight. I'm with you till approximately 7:55. Adjust your clocks then, because we got Corky Kell Classic High School kickoff right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Not just tonight. How about the next two nights right here on 92.9 The Game? Love that. And our boys, Sam Crenshaw and Chris Parker, coach, going to be on the call tonight. Looking forward to hearing from them as we kick off the high school football season here in the great city of Atlanta and the great state of Georgia. But we got to talk some pro ball. Oh, my. Everybody was kung fu fighting. Da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na. What a scene at Flowery Branch today. And our quarterback, that's right, that's my quarterback. My quarterback was in the middle of it. Michael Penix Jr. was scrapping. I don't know how much scrapping he actually did, but he was in the scrum. He was in the middle of the scrum. Day two, Titans got their front whooped yesterday at Flowery Branch, and they came out. Oh, they were talking. They were talking. And reports are Michael Penix didn't take none too kindly to what was being said directed at him specifically. And then we got to brawling. And offensive linemen, defensive linemen, there was a lot of big bodies, a lot of man meat in the middle of that pile. Hundreds, if not thousands of pounds, just getting after it. And that was the headline from today's practice. Falcons continue to look good. Penix continues to look good. But the story of the day from Flowery Branch is this skirmish involving QB1. Now, thankfully, nothing happened. There were no injuries. There were no broken bones. There was no reported tears to come from this fight. But they got after it. And I heard on Dukes and Bell, they were saying, you know, the idea of two-day joint practices might be a little much, because on that second day, things tend to go like they did today. You get a little chirpy, you get a little feisty. You know, in the NFL, it's one and done. There's no series in the NFL. You play 60 minutes, and you take your ball and go home. Because if it was any more than that, things might get a little personal out there, as they apparently did today with Michael Penix Jr. But I love it. Because that just goes along. Now, I don't love Michael Penix being involved in a skirmish. Get him out of there. But what I do love is this continued theme of a ramped up, high energy, high drama camp from the Falcons. From James Pierce Jr. to Jalen Walker to Matt Bergeron and everybody else getting involved. I love to see it. And so should you. I love this renewed exuberance, vibrant energy coming out of Flowery Branch. I love it, and I want to see that translate. And you know what? It translated to the first preseason game, and we'll see if it translates to the second preseason game, which will be right here again, coverage starting at 5 o'clock on Friday against the Titans on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. So I'm pumped. I love hearing this. Get after it. And from all accounts, Falcons won the week. Titans did have a bit of a bounce back today, but overall, we'll ask Myles Garrett coming up in 15 minutes. He was there on site, boots on the ground. We'll talk to Joe Patrick tomorrow. He was there on site, boots on the ground. We'll get you covered, pillar to post, as we always do. But from all accounts I've been reading, Falcons won this one, these joint practices. So we'll see what that means in terms of who plays on Friday, who doesn't. Michael Penix Jr. not expected to play. Kirk Cousins still up in the air. We also got an update potentially on Darnell Mooney. We'll let you hear that as well. But Michael Penix Jr. did take to the mic after the game, and this is what he said about the skirmish that occurred today at Flowery Branch.
Competitive, threw a deep pass. They had a lot of words throughout practice, so I gave my words, and Just went a little bit too far. I don't know. I was somebody else. I don't really remember. That's not something that we want to be doing in practice. We want to get our reps in, you know, get that good work in. But it went how it went. But to see the team have my back and they were there, make sure they protect me. A lot of guys asked me if I was good, and it was good to know that those guys got my back. So I don't know where I was at in it. It was a lot of people. I know I was down there somewhere. I wasn't the only one, though.
It looked like when everything was calming down, you kind of didn't mind going over and giving them a few more words, and the teammate kind of held you back.
Nah, I really don't remember what happened. That was somebody else out there.
They were so used to seeing you like calm, cool, and collected.
Yeah, that's me.
Yes. So.
That's me. I don't know what that was.
I like it. Let the big dog eat, man. If QB1's going to run like that, you know what's going to happen? The rest of the team is going to follow suit. And they did. Everybody was out there. Matthew Bergeron, who I don't think I've ever seen tweet in my entire life, tweeted out today, "That's my quarterback." That's right. That's Money Mike. That's Money Mike. That's the real Money Mike right now. He's about to steal that nickname. Although Harris has been playing a lot better of late, so that's not fair. But he was Money Mike today. He was also talking about, "Hey, man, I've never been in the middle of a scuffle like that before."
I don't remember. I'll tell you, I don't be remembering. Like, it's just beast. I don't know who that is. I don't remember, to be honest.
What's it like that?
I don't think I had that on the field before. I've never had that situation on the field before.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was.
Not on the field, yeah.
Yeah, apparently, again, there were shots being called, names being called, and Penix said enough is enough, and that was it, and you love it. Now, that should be it. This shouldn't be a repeated pattern that we undergo here from Michael Penix Jr. I'm glad we got it. It inspired the team, and hopefully that continues on Friday. He was also asked about Kirk Cousins and their relationship going on throughout camp.
Oh, it's been great. Like, he knows a lot. Like, he's seen a lot, you know, in his 13 years of playing. And, you know, he's definitely somebody who I can ask questions to. And he's always there quick to respond and, you know, give me his insight and what he's seen in the past and how I could operate at a high level to go out there and be successful. So he's been great for not just me, but his team as well. He's been a great leader. So
one more before we get out of here. And that's good to hear. And, again, that's been the consistent messaging from everyone involved, that Kirk is playing ball, he's doing what he needs to do. And if he continues to do that, that'll be all the more things that other teams will want to see in terms of a potential trade. Last one from Cousins here, from Penix. He says, "I don't think about my previous injury history when I go out there and play ball."
Yeah, man, I don't really focus on it no more. Like I talked about it before, like in my past, like 2021 was a tough season for me because I was thinking about injuries. I wasn't able to play at a high level because that's something where my mind was, and I wasn't able to you know, play at the level that I wanted to. But now it's like, man, I've been injured 4 times. You know, I just pray, trusting my faith and trust that God's going to protect me. I go out there and have fun because at any moment it could be my last play. You know, and that's for anybody. That's the game that we play. We know it comes with a lot, but we all love it. That's why we do it each and every day, and that's why I'm going to continue to do it each and every day.
He's right. You can't think about it because if you do, then you stutter step here, stutter step there. And that's the difference between a touchdown and an interception. So that's the skinny of what was going down at Falcons practice today. We'll get even more inside look coming up here in less than 5 minutes on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game as Myles Garrett of Fox 5 TV was at practice today. He'll join me next. We'll speak with Joe Patrick tomorrow. So plenty, all the Falcons coverage you need, fit to print. Right here, or fit for radio, on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. It's Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle with you till 7:55. Back with you here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is Chris Thomas, Turtle, taking you up until the start of the second Corky Kell game of the evening, which we got for you right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Our guys, Coach and Sam Crenshaw, will be on the call. But we got to talk about right now on the WayForward.com hotline what went down at Flowery Branch today. Myles Garrett of Fox 5 Sports host and reporter. Miles, from your vantage point, how did this all go down? QB1 was involved. It was an absolute chaotic scene today at Flowery Branch, from everything I understand.
Yeah, no, and it's funny. That was just one of a few different skirmishes that happened today. And, of course, that's just the one that caught all the eyeballs because, yes, it involved Michael Penix Jr. But, no, as far as that one is concerned, yeah, no, I mean, it was a deep throw to Ray-Ray McCloud, conceivably for a touchdown. In the words of Michael Penix Jr., it was a play that, you know, some guys were chirping. He decided to chirp back, and one thing kind of led to another. And, you know, I was kind of looking at where the ball was, Ray-Ray McCloud. I noticed a scuffle going on and checked over there. And lo and behold, Michael Penix Jr. is in a little skirmish with somebody. I see his helmet go off. He's at the bottom of a pile. It was a pretty intense little fight there. You know, cooler heads prevailed. Both sides came over there and broke it up. But, yeah, just a handful of different fights. Casey Washington was involved in one. Caleb McGarry. There was a few different skirmishes there today.
What did you make of Michael Penix Jr.'s comments after the game, talking about his appreciation for the team, having his back and everything like that? It sounds like it was a unified front.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. And, of course, that's always what you want when it's your quarterback, right? I mean, you always want – I mean, there's a reason why the guy's wearing a red jersey. He is a guy that cannot be touched no matter what in these joint practices, even though some of these guys are not supposed to be hitting. They're still getting some tackling in. But yeah, at the end of the day, you don't want your quarterback to take any unnecessary shots, especially with a guy like Michael Penix Jr., who has had a little bit of that injury history back in college. But football is football at the end of the day. And his teammates did come to his back, which he credited a lot. You know, he likes that he has the backing of his team, and what a quarterback wouldn't, right? I mean, that's what you want at the end of the day, a team that sticks up for your starting quarterback. I don't care who it is, whether it was Desmond Ridder or Marcus Mariota, you stand up for your quarterback, and the Falcons did that today.
So now the expectation comes, Miles, as that he will not play in the second preseason game. But it sounds like, based on what Raheem Morris said, the door has been left over for potentially Kirk Cousins to walk through.
Yeah, he didn't necessarily shut that door. I don't expect to see him play, but there has not been a definitive yes or no on whether or not Kirk will play, which is saying something, because there has been a definite no in regards to guys like Michael Penix Jr., conceivably, you know, Bijan Robinson, Drake London, all those other starters you kind of have penciled in there. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see what Kirk can bring to the table. He had a pretty good day at practice today. Again, some of his throws were on the shorter side. You know, he wasn't really spreading the ball downfield too much. He had a couple decent throws there, but nothing that was, you know, crazy, I'd say. But at the end of the day, you know, you do want to see what you have in your backup quarterback option. We got a decent look at Easton Stick in that first game against the Lions, and, you know, a little bit of Emory Jones as well. But at the end of the day, if nothing changes, Kirk Cousins is your backup quarterback, and I'd imagine you'd want to see him get a little bit of reps in the preseason.
When it comes to the rest of the practice today, outside of those skirmishes, how did everybody look?
Yeah, I'd say today, Chris, was more of a more balanced day. You know, yesterday, I think it was pretty across the board that the Falcons won the afternoon. I mean, that you can look at the Titans interviews. They basically said the exact same thing. They kind of got punched in the mouth yesterday. So today was a little bit more balanced. The Titans, again, I think there's a reason why there was more of those fights that we saw, because I think the Titans came out a little bit more, chippier than they did yesterday. The battles with A.J. Terrell and Calvin Ridley were pretty good. I'd say Ridley got the best of A.J. today. But outside of that, Michael Penix Jr. didn't have his best day overall, all things considered. I think even before that fight, I think he was doing a little bit better. I think after the fight is when he kind of slowed down just a bit. But credit to the Titans defensive line. You know, they were getting some pressures on him early. As far as the throws themselves, Penix missed Drake London a couple times and some short throws. Again, it's practice. Take that as you will. But not the best day for him. Casey Washington, once again, to me, is catching most of everybody's eye on this beat, I would say, just because he seemingly has locked up. I don't want to say locked up. That's really a strong word there. But things are looking good for Casey Washington in that number four wide receiver spot when Darnell Mooney, of course, returns. He has a lot of repertoire with Penix. You know, they spoke about that specifically today, coming in that rookie class together. And, you know, the reps he's been able to get in Mooney's absence, you've been able to really notice out there on the field. So he's been the one catching the most eyeballs. He continued that again today.
Talking all things Falcons today at Flowery Branch with our good buddy Miles Garrett. Make sure you check him out on Fox 5. All right, do you feel like you saw enough to be satisfied with the state of the offense. We'll start with the offense, that if they don't play in the preseason, that you got a good enough look at what they could potentially be.
Gosh, that's a really tough question, Chris, because, I mean, again, you want to see these guys get some reps. And I think back to last year, you know, that first game against Pittsburgh, the offense did come out looking a little sluggish. Now, you can credit that to new offensive scheme with Zach Robinson, Kirk Cousins, the injury, what have you. At the end of the day, that's kind of what these preseason games are for, right? You want to get some reps in and sort of, you know, get these guys used to playing live action scrimmage play, you know, against one another where tackling is involved. You know, you're in a game environment. So, you know, without tackling and going full speed, I'd say, yeah, this offense does look pretty good. I like what I've seen from training camp thus far of what this Zach Robinson scheme is doing. You've got Bijan Robinson, Kyle Pitts out in the flex, kind of putting them in positions to succeed. But at the end of the day, you got to see what these guys look like in live game reps. And Raheem Morris, Michael Penix, all these guys seem to think they are comfortable in this regard when it comes to that. But we won't find out until that first game against Tampa Bay.
No, you're 100% right. When it comes to the back end of the defense, what have you been seeing there? I know there's some competitions going on with some vets and some young guys.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's going to be really interesting out there, especially in the secondary, you know, talking about the two new rookies there with Xavier Watts and Billy Bowman Jr. Both those guys have had their share of working in with the ones, which is obviously what you want to see, especially a guy like Xavier Watts, who came in with a pretty high regard out of Notre Dame. But, you know what you're getting with AJ, you know what you're getting with Jesse, you know, Jordan Fuller is, I think, your penciled in starter for now at free safety opposite Jesse. But outside of that, yeah, I mean, Xavier Watts has looked pretty decent. He's still a rookie, still learning. Billy Bowman has really shined on special teams, I'd say. Dee Alford, you know, speaking about guys that had a pretty good practice, I'd say he had a pretty good practice this afternoon. He had a pretty good interception after the Falcons defense forced a little bit of pressure on Cam Ward. He was able to have a nice toe tap sideline interception. So pretty good camp, I'd say, out of all those guys. I'd say Natron Brooks, kind of an reported guy, for lack of a better term, that has had a pretty good camp thus far. He had a pretty good game, I think, against the Lions, all things considered. Another guy I'm trying to think of, maybe not on the back end, but Josh Woods is another guy in that linebacking core that was all over the field in that Lions game. So he was a guy that really stood out to me. Again, you're not seeing these starters play yet. You know, we've talked night and day about James Pierce Jr. and what he's been able to do. So we kind of know what we're getting at there at that point. As far as the back end of the secondary, that's what I've seen so far.
When it comes to the front of the defensive line, what did you get to see from JPJ and Jalen Walker out there? Did they look like they were holding their own?
Jalen Walker is a guy that has seemingly been a little bit slower than, you know, James Pierce Jr., all things considered. James Pierce looks a little bit more fine-tuned when it comes to that pass rushing type skill. Jalen Walker, you know, he was excellent at Georgia when it came to run stopping, and you've seen a little bit of that in camp so far. I think it's the position that he's in right now, sort of that edge rusher, linebacker, you know, hybrid type role, where he's kind of moving all over the field, learning Jeff Ulbrich's defense. I'm expecting him to have a little bit of a slower start, just at least what I've seen in camp so far, and you can kind of credit that to maybe the hamstring injury that was kind of holding him back for a little bit. But I'm not concerned with either one of those guys, especially James Pierce, just from what I've seen so far. And Jalen Walker, we know what he can bring to the table. I think with him, it's more of a developmental thing at this point. I think he's just working on understanding the system and getting his feet wet and not, you know, thinking as much as playing than, you know, some other guys right now.
Right now, based on what's being said at camp, do you think we'll see Darnell Mooney week one?
Michael Penix Jr. seemed to suggest that today. I will say Raheem Morris has not hinted at what time that might be. Penix briefly mentioned it when I can't remember if he was asked specifically about it or if he brought it up. I want to say he brought it up, but he did kind of briefly touch on the fact that, yeah, you know, expecting to see Mooney week one. So take that with what you will. That is his quarterback. I'm sure these guys are talking in the locker room behind the scenes. You know, I imagine they've got a better idea than we do as far as what these players' health issues or non-issues might be. I don't expect him to miss a lot of time. It's just, I feel like with what Raheem Morris has said in some of these press conferences, it's kind of given pause on when that date might be because he hasn't given one. So I think that's kind of been the cause of concern there.
It sounds like from everything I've been reading and looking online, like I know you mentioned Casey Washington, but a shout-out to Ray McLeod, who seems to be catching almost everything thrown his way as well.
Yeah, no, the speedster, he's getting down the field. That wide receiver set right now, at least, you know, with Mooney out, it's been Drake, it's been Ray, it's been Casey, and it's been Kadarius Hodge, you know. So all those guys have kind of been out there in a four-wide set. I'd say Kyle Pitts has kind of moved into a de facto receiver-type role-ish. You know, he's been working with the receivers specifically, and I've been seeing him out wide a lot more. So, you know, at this point, I'd kind of consider him a little bit more of a receiver than a tight end.
Before I let you go, this might be a tough question to answer just based on when and how you were watching, but have you seen Warner on the field at the same time with Pitts?
Charlie Warner, yeah. No, if I can recall correctly, I'm not sure if I was looking for it specifically, but from what I can recall, I do think I've seen both those guys on the field at the same time.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see if they deploy that personnel set more often than they did last year. Miles, appreciate the time as always. Good stuff. Appreciate you checking in from camp. We'll talk soon.
Talk soon, Chris. See ya.
All right, that is Miles Garrett there of Fox 5. When we get back, we got a bunch of interviews from you to hear today, as we have been playing all throughout Falcons training camp, which it's crazy to think, came and went. Just like that. Today was our last time being up at Flowery Branch as a radio station. D'Angelo Malone stopped by the midday show today. He's been a guy that's been all over the field in the preseason so far, making plays. We'll let you hear what he had to say to our guys in the middays next as we roll on. Chris Thomas tonight, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Back with you here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle with you for about another hour here. We'll get you set for the Corky Kell Classic with our buddies Sam and the coach, Sam Crenshaw and Chris Parker on the call right here for some high school ball on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. The theme of the day, fighting. First rule of Fight Club, you don't talk about Fight Club. Does that apply to Flowery Branch? I don't know. But we are talking about it regardless on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Michael Penix Jr. did meet the media after practice. I let you hear about his thoughts on the fighting and everybody getting his back and how he loved to see that. But he also talked about a bunch of other stuff that I wanted you to hear, including on this revamped defensive line. This was QB1's thoughts on the D-line.
Yeah, man, it's been great. Like, all them boys been doing a great job. You know, we got a lot of leaders all around this team. Obviously, Jesse, he's been playing at a high level. You know, AJ, all those guys, man. You got not just David, but even the young guys. You got TQ as well, an older guy. But you got young guys. You got Rook and Dorless, those guys on the inside, you know, making causing some disruption in the offense. You know, it's going to be great to see come game day, week one, and to see all season. So I can't wait to see those boys, you know, continue to get better each and every day.
Oren, what's my line? They better. That defensive line that they invested all those draft picks in, second-round picks, third-round picks, first-round picks this year, two of them, yeah, they better be rip-roaring and ready to go. And I think Michael Penix Jr. is absolutely right that they will certainly be just that when it comes time to suit up at the beginning of the season, which is just a few weeks away now when Tampa comes to town. He also said, listen, man, this team, we did not take these joint practices lightly, and we're sure glad we didn't.
A lot. That's what I'm saying. It's good work. They brought good work. A lot. And like I said, to be able to see another defense, you know, other than our own. And, you know, I feel like we've been game planning on our defense for a while. It was good to be able to go against somebody else and, you know, see different things that could pop up, you know, when it comes game week, you know, week one or, you know, whenever down the road, and just seeing different looks, different pressure looks, coverages that, you know, will work better with certain route concepts that we have. And it was good. And I feel like we put a lot into it, and we definitely took it serious.
But the question is, Oren, is it enough? Because more likely than not, this is going to be the most extensive look that we have at Michael Penix in the first team offense and defense together as a full unit before week one. Did we see enough to say, hey, we're good? We don't need any more of the first team reps. I tend to agree with Miles Garrett. I think just I'm holding my fingers together like a grain of salt apart. Just a little something from the first team. Just
that Patrick Mahomes one drive.
Yeah, just that
like
one
that.
Drive. Just let me see it. Because even, you know, joint practices are great, but, like, you can't substitute being out on that field where there's no – because, like, if you – so here's the thing, Orm. If you've never seen a joint practice, it's not the same as being on the field. The intensity's high, clearly. Look what happened today. But there's coaches all around. It's done in, like, a semicircle with all the teams gathered around. Like, it's not, like, game day operation look-alike. If that makes sense for Falcons fans out there. So, you know, picture the field, picture all the Titans on one side, all the Falcons on the other side, and all the players are on the field, right? That's not what joint practices look like for the scrimmage, for the most part. There's coaches on the field. There's people, you know, in and out of the huddle. Like, it's not just completely, let's just suit them up and go play. They play with intensity, don't get me wrong, but it's not just like, oh, yeah, we're going to simulate a game from pillar to post. Penix Jr. was talking about that contact, though, and he says it's good to get a little prep for the real thing.
You know, for the quarterback, we don't take any hits, you know, in practice. So it's, like I said, it's hard for me to simulate, you know, what that's going to feel like other than just knowing what it's been like all my life. So it's like I'm not really worried about the contact part of it. I trust in my O-line. They're going to protect me. And whenever I do got to make a play to extend a play, you know, I will. And if I got to take a hit to stand in the pocket and make a big-time throw for a touchdown, I'm going to do that too. So it's like I might wake up sore the next morning. It is what it is. That's football. Everybody's sore, you know, but you just keep pushing through it and make sure you take care of your body and, you know, you'll be good that next week.
Yeah, and that totally makes sense. And listen, I don't expect him to, again, be involved in anything like this again for the rest of the preseason, certainly now that the joint practices are over. All right, let's hear from one of the rising stars at camp. D'Angelo Malone made plays in the preseason game. He's been good at practice, good in these joint practices as well. He was on with the middays, and this was their conversation.
I would say the process has been pretty smooth. You know, I always, you know, just dwell on things. You know, like I said, I came a long way, but just being in position right now, I'm blessed. Man, just keep building with the team. It'll be something special.
It seemed like, and this happens in joint practices, it seemed like it was pretty chippy out there. Now, we only got to watch like the first 10 minutes of 11-on-11, but we saw a couple scraps. Was that pretty much the case today? Is that kind of what the vibe was?
Not really. You know, guys just want to impose their will. Guys out there competing. You know, it's highs and lows, but at the end of the day, it's just having fun.
How has it been, you know, because, you know, you obviously this wasn't the regime that drafted you. The GM was, but right. But coming in, having 1 year under Ra, do you see any difference from last year to this year with them in the program?
Not really. I would honestly say, you know, coaches still got the same mindset, coming out there winning, competing. But, you know, it's just coaches just want to win, and that's what it's all about.
D'Angelo Malone joining us here on the Midday Show with Andy and Randy. Practice over for the day. Joint practice with the Titans, day two over. They'll take on the Titans on Friday night. How about for you? Is your role any different in the defense this year, maybe than last year or years past?
Slightly. I would say outside linebacker was my original position, but I'm starting to learn inside linebacker. It's pretty smooth. So instead of going forward, you know, you're going backwards sometimes, but it's pretty fun. You know?
How's that been? Because like you said, you were outside linebacker, moving inside the different keys that you got to key on different. How's that for you?
It's pretty smooth. You know, it's all about just having the right eyes, correct eyes, and just trusting your ability. You know, I feel like the guys we got in the room, Kaden Ellis, Josh Woods, Devon Diablo, those guys are there to help you, like big brothers.
What's the biggest difference? I mean, obviously you have to be an incredibly good football player along the way in order to get drafted anyway. And then you come in and you're sort of used in a specific way. And maybe it's even a compliment for them to say, you know what, we think that you can do this too. We see versatility in you. You could do this too. But what is the biggest difference doing both now?
It's really not a difference at all. I still got the same mindset, go out there, compete, put my best foot forward. But I would just say, like, just with the inside linebacker, you got to make more checks. You got to be aware of your keys. But outside linebacker, you're just going.
Now, you are one of them wild men. I call y'all guys wild men because you led the team in as far as special teams tackles last year, special teams plays.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're talking about playing because obviously you want to play. You have that mindset. I don't give a damn. Put me out there. I'll just go down and run and hit somebody. But talk about your mindset when it comes to them teams because it's always the most overlooked aspect of a football team.
Yes, I would say special team is really like the first player, you know, of the game. It's either it could be first down or you make a big tackle inside the 25. You know, just getting the offense some juice before they go on the field, or defense. It's going to be fun.
How is that new kickoff treating you? Because we know it's a new rule and everything you guys got. How have you had to adjust your game to that? Or is it just beat the man in front of me and go back to play? And also, how is it being on the receiving end of that?
Yeah, honestly, you know, just being your man, it's a one-on-one match. Well, that's if you don't get double teamed. But, you know, I feel like mostly every kick going to get returned or filled, so it's going to be fun. More tackles are going to be made. And, you know, as far as blocking, everything is going to be fun.
I mean, you have to think it's fun in order to do that, right?
Yeah.
Like, you can't be out there like, oh, God. You're putting your body on the line every play out there. How good do you feel like this defense can be? I mean, there's some new faces. It's relatively young, I think, compared to some of the other defenses in the league. Certainly some high young draft picks. What do you feel like the ceiling is for this group?
Oh, man, the sky's the limit for this defense. Just the group of guys we have around, you know, I feel like every guy is coming together. The chemistry is getting there. You know, we got some vets sprinkling in with some young guys, but at the end of the day, everybody got the same mindset. Everybody's eager to get out there and compete and win games.
Last one for me, and it was one of the first questions we gave, actually, when we had you on when you first drafted, talking about, because you are from here.
Yes, sir.
The ticket situation. No problems.
No problems.
All these years, no problems.
At first, it was. You
okay.
Because
I remember talking to you. I said, hey, do they know you got to pay for them tickets?
Right.
All right, so we got to level it out now?
Yes, sir. Like, once I start talking to them, you know, you're getting better understanding. Right. They start understanding.
Okay, good. Yes, that's the one right now.
But at first, everybody wants to come to every game.
Everybody
right?
Everybody
want to
come. Hey, everybody want to talk. Just call him. Just call him, because I know he get tickets for free. Yeah, I get tickets for free, but actually, they're not free.
Right.
But also, you guys know he's getting ready for a game. Like. You've got to get ready to play.
Man.
Pretty hard job to do.
It is.
Let me ask you one final question. And, again, D'Angelo Malone, nice enough to hang out with us after practice. Jeff Ulbrich, new defensive coordinator. We hear everybody talk about the energy that he brings. He says some wild quotes in some of his press conferences.
Yeah.
I don't know if you have a favorite line or a favorite motto that he throws at you guys or whatever, but what has it been like with him with the defense?
Oh, man. Just the day, just, you know, every day he really attacks the day, just the way he go about things, and just his deliverance. I feel like he wants us to be at our best, play together, and play hard.
Yeah, definitely seems that way.
Well, you stay healthy, mate. Yeah, you stay healthy, brother.
Yes,
you really represent, dog,
yes,
man.
Sir, I appreciate it.
D'Angelo Malone there.
Thank you.
Ellenwood Zone, nice enough to hang out with us and chat for a little bit as practice wraps up.
Yeah, again, there's a lot of those guys out there on this team that may not be household names, but are starting to make plays. D'Angelo Malone was a guy that's been on this team for a few years now, and we know that he has a lot of potential, and maybe this is the year that he pops. There's a bunch of guys like that. Rook, Dorless, all these guys that we're counting on this season in order to make big steps, in order to make this defense what it needs to be. How much can Xavier Watts do as a rookie? How much can Billy Bowman do as a rookie? How much are these guys going to be able to just hop out of the gates in year one and make an instant impact on a team that is expected to contend and fight for a playoff spot? And D'Angelo Malone is certainly one of those guys. Coming up next, you'll hear from Chris Blair, another guy, similar vein, that has been around this team for a couple of years now, is a guy that's made some plays both in preseason and in the regular season when he's gotten some limited opportunities. So if there's nothing you can't say about this team, it's that there certainly is depth to go around. Now, I know certain areas like the offensive line, you'd like to have more productive depth than what we've seen so far. But at the end of the day, there's a lot of positions that you can say that there's a lot of people fighting for. And D'Angelo Malone, whether that's as a linebacker or an edge or whatever he's going to play for this team, is certainly one of those guys that's fighting for one of those spots. All right, 1 hour down and 1 hour left to play with you here as we, again, are going to throw it to South Paulding and Kell in the Cork and Kell Dave Hunter Classic coming up at the bottom of next hour. But again, when we get back, Chris Blair, a guy that's made some plays for the Falcons already in preseason, will be looking to do so again on Friday night. What did he have to say to our guys on Dukes and Bell? You will hear that conversation coming up next, plus more from Michael Penix Jr. as well. This is Chris Thomas tonight, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, and take us with you on the Odyssey app. Hour number two of the program here. It is Chris Thomas tonight, Turtle, with you until the top of next hour when the Corky Kell Classic comes your way with Sam Crenshaw and the coach. But the story of the day that we are talking about is Michael Penix Jr. and his ability to continue to show growth and leadership, this time in a little bit of an unconventional way. He was involved in a scuffle, a skirmish, a Donnybrook. How many different ways can I say this? There was a fight at practice today involving QB1, and he was in the center of it. Words were said that shouldn't have been said, and he responded in kind. And the team had his back, and hopefully this is the last we see of that, but it was day two of joint practices, so you have to expect that tempers are going to flare a little bit, and they did. And QB1 was interviewed after today, and he was talking about how great it was to see that his teammates had his back when they needed him most.
It's great, you know, to know that, you know, I got people that's behind me, got my back, and it's going to be there no matter what. Yeah, and a lot of guys came up and checked up on me because they saw I was at the bottom of the pile, and they just make sure I was good. And, you know, I was like, I'm good, like, let's practice. But it's great to know that I got people that got my back.
Yeah, again, we don't ever want to see you at the bottom of another pile. Hopefully not for the rest of the season. Inevitably, it will happen. That's just the nature of football. But hopefully those things are few and far between. Michael Penix Jr. was also talking about the state of his various weapons on offense and all these different guys that we've been talking about. You'll hear from one of them coming up in just a minute, and Chris Blair, that he has to get the rock to.
It's been great. A lot of guys are competing at a high level. Obviously, Drake, he does what he does each and every day. Like he's talked about Casey, you know, stepping up, and he's been great for us all camp. You know, he's been showing a lot of great things, you know, on tape. And, you know, and that's just building that, me and him building that trust together, so that whenever game week comes and he is out there on that field, you know we're gonna be on the same page. Obviously Mooney, you know, we'll have him back coming up in the season. I feel like he should be back week one. Not sure as far as that. I'm not going to talk too much about that. But he's been doing good with his recovery and stuff like that. So we definitely know we have him as well. And he's going to be a big-time playmaker for us. And Ray and Kyle, they've been consistent this camp. And it's exciting to see. It's exciting to see. Bijan and Tyler, every day, consistent, same person. You know what you're going to get. And it's been great.
Wait a minute. Oren. Did Michael Penix Jr. just pull a Kirk and say something that he wasn't supposed to say? He thinks he should be back for week one.
Obviously, Mooney, you know, we'll have him back coming up in the season. I feel like he should be back week one. Sure as far as that. I'm not going to talk too much about that. But
okay. All right, QB1.
He just talked a whole lot about it, though, QB1.
Yeah, you really did. You learned from the best there in doing that by accident, Kirk Cousins. And to finish up here before we hear from Chris Blair, how about Mooney when he gets back? It's going to be just like riding a bike, right?
No, not much worry, because we spent off season, you know, working together. We spent the off season working together. We took a QB receiver trip out to Cali this off season, you know, spent some time with each other, you know, try to get that chemistry down. So I know whenever he come back, I know how he run his routes. You know, he knows where I like to put the ball, and we'll be good. I'm not really worried about that, because he gonna get open. I just gotta get him the ball, and you know, I feel like I know I'm gonna be able to do that. So.
Yeah, if this was someone like a Casey Washington or a Chris Blair or a David Sills, young guys that might make the team and they start to miss some time, then maybe, you know, because every rep is so valuable. But at the end of the day, Darnell Mooney is a vet. He's a pro. He knows how to run his routes, and he knows how to catch the rock from QB number one. All right, what about Chris Blair? Is he going to make this team? He chatted with Dukes and Bell today, and this is what he had to say about it.
All right, so today, last day of this joint practice with the Titans, we're with Chris Blair, and it looked like, man, things got a little chippy out there. I don't know if you were involved in that, but talk about that, because Mike and I were saying this yesterday on the show. The second day, you know, guys maybe trying to get back some energy.
Yeah, I think the intensity was high, and guys were flying around. We got very competitive. I feel like Tuesday we had a very good practice versus them, and I feel like they wanted to come out for some Avengers today, so... they tried to come full force, and we did the same. So, yeah, it got a little rowdy out there, but I think we still ended up having a productive practice.
Heard the wide receiver coach saying, CB, you know, got you back. Yeah. Big competition, but big opportunity for you, man. Your third year with the team, and with Darnell on the sidelines, how you feeling about your effort this camp?
I feel like everything is going well. Just taking advantage of all my opportunities that I'm getting, just trying to make the most of them for real, knowing all my alignments and assignments, and just being in the right spot at the right time and gaining trust with my quarterback. So everything is working out pretty well.
I always say the preseason matters because of the work. And you ended up getting a touchdown in the first preseason game. Talk about that play and getting open and your route running and how that's developed for you.
Absolutely. I think Ike Hilliard and KJ Black and the rest of the guys have done a great job of honing in on our details as far as running routes and getting open and the little things that we need to do to gain that separation. And I got that opportunity to put some things like that on tape, just gain the separation. And that's what happened on the touchdown. I knew I had a chance to make a play up top. And the main thing, I just wanted my quarterback to know I was going to win. So as long as he know that and he was going to give me a chance, I knew I had to come down with the ball.
Number 19, Chris Blair with us, guys, on Dukes and Bell. How's Penix looking, man, now that he has got the leadership role, which he really embraces? The team's got his back, it looks like.
Absolutely, yeah. We're riding with him for sure. He's coming out every day. He's making plays. He's got that swag that you want to see in a quarterback. Every time he makes a big throw or something like that, he just kind of gives us this look. We already know that he's on. He's ready. But, yeah, man, he's balling. He's taking command of the huddle. Everybody trusts him, and he got everybody trust. So that's the main thing. Like, long as the team believes in them, I think we're going to work out well.
You are also possibly and probably playing a lot of special teams. Talk about that as well, because any way you can contribute to make the team is what it's about. Obviously, you want to be a wide receiver, you want to be on offense, but the special teams aspect may play a role in that.
Absolutely, yes, sir, most definitely. Special teams is definitely a key part of the game. And like you said, any way that you can get on the field and help the team out. So I just try to go out there, and I treat special teams just like offense. I'm going to go out there and give it my best effort. I know where to align and assign. And I just want to go out there and let my coaches know that they can trust me at any point. Like, wherever they put me, I'm going to give my best effort and try to make a play.
From a small town in Mississippi through Alcorn State, talk about your journey, man, to the NFL.
It's been quite a journey. It's been quite a journey. I mean, like you said, coming from a small town, having to go junior college, and from junior college going to Alcorn State, but I wouldn't trade it because it really taught me like the definition of hard work and responsibility, having to take what you get, what you have, and make it work. So Alcorn really kind of taught me that, and now just being here, man, I'm blessed. I don't take nothing for granted. So just being here, it's not a coincidence. I feel like it's a testament to all the hard work, and obviously God put me in this position.
CB, how many balls you catch out of that damn jugs machine, man?
I catch before and after practice. So
how many balls?
I'll say probably by the end of the day, at least like 250.
250 balls?
Yeah, about 250.
What's that jug sound, Mike? Foom. Because I'm always like, man, how many balls do you have to catch? Man, we see you. You got the hands. Man, how many balls? And I'm like, so 250
yeah,
a day.
All right. So you have to, you know, stay on top of your craft, because sometimes, you know, like we get in practice and the ball might not come your way as much. So you still want to stay on top of it, make sure you still can catch the ball and focus on the little details, especially when you're tired at the end of practice. First thing you want to do is go in, get you something to drink and chill. But, you know, just if I can focus while I'm tired, I know when I got energy and everything, I'm good to go. So.
Chris Blair with us, guys, showed up on the stat sheet, had a good game against the Lions. How tough is it, though, knowing, man, you got to make the most out of every opportunity? Or is that just, you don't let that get in your head, you just go with the flow?
I really don't think too much about it. That's my mindset regardless, even if I had a solidified spot on the team or not. It's just more so when I go on the field, I'm treating every snap like it's my last, because I know there's so many people that want to be in my shoes and want to be in this position and don't have the chance to. So I just go out there every time I get on the field, I'm going to give my best and give my all to the team.
Before we let you go, tell the people, tell Falcon fans something about Chris Blair that we do not know. What does CB like to do? What's different about you away from this game?
I don't really do too much, honestly, but I can say this. I can say this. It's nothing crazy to do, but at the end of the day, I can say I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Jesus.
Okay.
And just what he's been in my life and getting me to this point, I can't do nothing but give him thanks for that. So that's who I am, man.
There's nothing wrong with that, brother. You got to have some faith, no doubt about it. Chris Blair, thank you, brother.
Yes, sir, thank you. Appreciate you.
That is Chris Blair, again, one of the guys that is trying to make the team this year, and hopefully if he continues to show out in the preseason, he'll give himself a good opportunity to do just that. It's something that there's a space for it. There's a need for it. He's a big body. He's a guy that has shown the ability to make good catches on balls, and Michael Penix Jr. laid one perfectly in the breadbasket in the first preseason game, and hopefully we'll see more of that. I'm not entirely sure. Between him and Casey Washington and David Sills and Drummond, there's a bunch of guys that are competing for just one or two at the most spots. So it's going to be tough, and it's going to be a tough competition going on at the wide receiver position. speaking of tough competitions, how about them Braves last night, Orin? 13-5. It started out well. They came back. And then Spencer Strider, as we talked about, just absolutely imploded.
The Yankees. The Mets ran out of pyrotechnics and fireworks last night because they hit so many home runs.
Yeah.
And they couldn't fire off anymore.
And to top it all off, Pete Alonso ties and then breaks the record for most home runs hit by a Met, passing Daryl Strawberry. You know what's interesting about that? And I'm talking about baseball because we're going to have our buddy Rob Bradford on next. What does he think the Braves should do this offseason in terms of restructuring this team? Were you surprised to hear that the team home run record for the Mets was 253?
Very.
That seems low.
Just goes to show that, like, I don't know, they just can't keep guys there for an extended period of time. But I would thought maybe David Wright, maybe, just because – I think,
but his career was cut short.
He was cut short, like the longest tenured one, but
Piazza,
but you know,
Eric Carter,
kind of in between Piazza, between those that Dodgers run and then the Marlins run afterwards.
Keith Hernandez wasn't like a prolific home run hitter.
No, Keith had a good. He was a good average, good contact guy, but he wasn't. It's odd. Because you just thought that guys, I guess that's what the Mets sort of have been the last 30-some-odd years. It's just stop gaps for players, not full-time, like 10, 15-year career guys there.
No, and the ones that are, again, just weren't. I mean, you're talking about guys that were good players of their time, but like Carlos Beltran, Carlos Delgado, guys that they brought in, Jose Reyes, those guys weren't hitting, you know, in the amount of time that they were with that organization, 300, 400 home runs. They weren't at that point in their career. Interesting stuff. All right, when we get back, we'll talk to Rob Bradford, Odyssey MLB insider, about what is going down with the Braves. What should they do this offseason to make sure this does not happen again next year? We'll do that next. Chris Thomas tonight, Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Back with you here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle, be with you until the start of the second game of the Corky Kell Classic. Currently in a weather delay in the first game, so we will be rocking and rolling until then. So now you'll have me for an undetermined amount of time. So that means you must continue to listen to Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Not that you wouldn't be tuning in to the Corky Kell Classic anyway, but now you'll probably just get some more of me before that. So lucky you. 404-726-0929. The question is, how did we get here? And what the heck do we do next year to get out of it to make sure that this doesn't happen again? Odyssey MLB Insider, host of Baseball Isn't Boring, Rob Bradford, my friend, my colleague, my amigo. Let's go back before we go forward, shall we? We had the great debate before the trade deadline. Should they? Shouldn't they? Who's even really available to move? Were you surprised at the lack of movement one way or the other from the Braves at the trade deadline?
Well, a little bit. And then, first of all, it's great being with you. And I'm making up new T-shirts that say the Braves aren't boring, because I don't feel like they – people might think they are boring, but after sort of digging into their situation, this team is anything but boring. This is maybe the most complicated existence that is around in Major League Baseball in a lot of ways. So to answer your question, I mean, that sort of speaks to what I'm talking about, which is there's not a lot of teams that just sit there and don't do anything, especially when you have obvious free agents, you have maybe obvious guys you can trade, or maybe it's just obvious places that you want to add. I think obviously what complicated it was Ozuna's no trade clause. That was a problem. I just think that this one, their time to get creative. And I know that everyone wants the trade deadline to be the be-all, end-all. But really, what we see at the trade deadline is a lot of teams saying, yeah, sure, if you want to blow me away for something, fine. But if not, I'm going to wait till the off season and I'm going to deal with a lot more teams than I'm dealing with now with a lot more reasonable prices. So I think that's sort of where they landed. But to answer your question, anytime any team doesn't really do much of anything, I'm a little surprised. But as you dig into it, I'm like, okay, this is more of an off-season thing, I think.
All right, so when it comes to the off-season, because this season's obviously going nowhere fast, what should be, in your opinion, the top priority for Alex Anthopoulos to look towards in terms of reshaping the team?
Oh, I mean, I think you have to get a starting pitcher, right? You have to get a reliable starting pitcher. And as much as you will, I would like to say, hey, I know one. I know one who's from Georgia, Dylan Cease. He's pretty good. Go watch him the last time he was out there. He's clocking in close to 100 with a slider he's writing poems about. I mean, this guy's legit. But at the same time, you know, you have an organization that hasn't really shown, other than signing extensions, that you're going to play in that part of the pool. So I think that the number one priority, however you do it, you have to find an answer there. And maybe it doesn't need to be a be-all, end-all, all-star type starter. But it does have to be someone reliable. It does, and you know, I know that everyone immediately defaults to like the Charlie Morton type, but the Charlie Morton type, not this Charlie Morton type, but the previous Charlie Morton type, a guy that you feel confident that he's going to give you innings, that he's going to give you results while you figure everything out, because you have some potential, obviously, but you also, with that potential, is so much uncertainty with Sale, with Strider, obviously with young guys. So I just think that you need some semblance of a starting pitcher that you feel good about, that he's going to give you a good outing every time he goes through the rotation. That has to be number one. Number two, I would say closers. But you know what? The closers who are on the market, the free agents, very volatile deal, man. Good luck with that.
Well, yeah, unfortunately, the guys that we have now certainly cannot be counted upon to do it again next year. But what about Ozzie Albies? How concerned are you that he might not be able to bounce back from a couple of off seasons now?
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm obviously concerned, but I think that's not really at the top of the list of problems. You know, I think that really you just sort of, to me, you sort of maybe ride it out. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm taking the wrong approach. But I just look at it, if we're talking about the big picture, about what is going to get the Braves back into the place where I'm actually going to feel good about picking them as a playoff contender every single time I come on, you know, it's going to be more than Ozzie Albies. It's going to be, like you said, it's going to be that starting pitching everyone was crowing about not too long ago. It's going to be all these guys who we were saying, oh, my goodness, Alex Anthopoulos, good for you for getting these guys to extension. I mean, I think I've said this before to you, I think. You know, I think the biggest thing is just to get these guys to play up to the back of their baseball cards. And I know that sometimes that's easier said than done, but there's enough signs here, I think, that suggest that they can do that. And it wasn't too long where they were doing that. And maybe all these falls under that. But really, to me, like, that's not the top of the power rankings of concerns for me right now.
At this point, no shot Snicker comes back, right?
No, I don't think so. No, I don't think so. And maybe that's another thing, right? Like, I think he's a really good manager. And obviously, you know, you have guys who, you know, you have evidence of him being a good manager. But when it comes to managing in baseball, sometimes it's you have good managers where maybe it's not the right guy at the right time. And I'm not in that clubhouse on an everyday basis, so I can't say, hey, listen, it's taking a turn, or maybe things have gone the other way with him. But all I know is that, you know, it's a results business. And sometimes if you find the guy, the right guy, even a lesser manager, to be perfectly honest with you, the right guy at the right time with the right group, you can take off. So, I mean, you talk about how they are going to get back on track. Well, you do have to make changes. You do have to make adjustments. And I've seen plenty of teams who have made slight adjustments like that have taken talented teams and turned the corner.
talking all things MLB with our Odyssey MLB Insider. Make sure you check out the pod. Baseball isn't boring. It's Rob Bradford with Chris Thomas here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. All right, some questions outside of Atlanta here. You buying these Brewers or what?
Oh, I mean, I'm buying them for the regular season. I love what they're doing, and I love the fact – I love Pat Murphy. You know, I was talking to Brian Anderson for the podcast yesterday about, you know, Pat Murphy and what he's been able to do. And you know, we talk about Snicker and how he has been doing and that relationship with the Braves and whether or not that's the right fit. Pat Murphy is the right fit for this team. And it is interesting to me when I see the teams that are usually in the Final Four in the last few years, you have managers who are experienced managers who understand what is important, what to prioritize, when to delegate, when to actually use the analytics, when not to use the analytics. And I think Pat Murphy falls under all that entire umbrella. So I think that's a big, big part of it because, you know, the first time I heard Pat Murphy's name, honestly, it was Dustin Pedroia telling stories about him in Arizona State. I'm thinking, man, this guy's a lunatic. Like, he's going to be a major league manager. But I think that he's been in pro ball long enough where he's evolved, and it's just the right place at the right time with the right group. And here's the thing. We talk about the trade deadline. It's pretty amazing when you get to the trade deadline. Even before this run, you get to the trade deadline, and you're the Milwaukee Brewers, and you say, well, what do the Milwaukee Brewers need? They don't need much. Now, that was before the deadline, and now they've taken off. They've constructed a really good team, but once again, you know, the playoffs are a different beast. And if you're going to ask me who I'm favorite in the postseason, I would take the Phillies over them. I'd probably take the Padres over them, and I never count out the Dodgers. So, yeah, I mean, I would say the people, the Brewers, Milwaukee, enjoy it while you can.
Speaking of the Dodgers, make it make sense. What's going on with Ohtani?
Oh, I mean, what, with a real estate venture?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, well, you know, this is the unfortunate thing because you have, you know, obviously you had the interpreter thing come up before, and majorly, you know, they make a very strong point. He had nothing to do with it. Then you have this situation, and you know, with his agent involved, and he's like, oh, he has nothing to do with it. I mean, I couldn't tell you if he is in the wrong with any of this stuff. All I know is that what it does is that when this kind of stuff keeps cropping up, then the problem is that every single time it happens, everyone's going to look at baseball and say, understand that this guy, they're going to do everything in their power to make sure this guy is still the face of baseball. They can have Emmanuel Class A busted for gambling. They can have some of these other guys take a turn. What they can't have is the face of baseball taking a turn for the worse when it comes to public perception. So I think that's, you know, we're going to have to ride that out a little bit, but it's just unfortunate because every time something like it, now, you know, it's multiple times now, we have to surface that exact conversation, which I just mentioned.
Which one of the New York teams figures it out? Do you think both will, either, neither, both? Where are you at with this?
That's a great question. I'm going to ask you a baseball question right after this because it came up to me the other day, which has nothing to do with that, but I just like the good baseball questions and debates. But when it comes to the Mets and the Yankees, you know, the Yankees, you know, I find it interesting that Aaron Boone keeps saying, it's just a shame because this is the most talented team that I had. And I think that, like, as much as we're crapping on the Yankees right now, and we're saying, look at that, bullpen's employing Devin Williams, having a terrible year. They're not going to figure it out. I've seen so many instances in early August, late July, where all of a sudden a team gets hot and the conversation changes. So I'm not going to put it past them. I mean, they have Max Fried. I know that he's taking a turn, but still, there's Max Fried, they have Rodon, they have guys. So I would actually probably take them, and I know that this probably isn't the popular opinion, but I don't buy what the Mets are selling with their starting pitching. I know they tried to backload the bullpen with all those arms, but I don't buy what they're selling when it comes to the starters. I mean, you can have all the relievers you want. The Padres have a ton of relievers. They're awesome. But you know what they also have? They also have pretty decent starters. So I'm just a little bit wary because of that with the Mets. And so now I'm going to ask you this. This is just, it has nothing to do with this, but I know you like talking baseball. This came up. We were looking at the 2020 draft. Who, if you had to redraft 2020 draft, Pete Crow Armstrong, Garrett Crochet, who are you taking number one?
Ooh, I think at this point, Rob, you got to go with the everyday player over the pitcher, especially with how often starting pitchers not only break down, Rob, but can't throw more than five innings.
It's a good one, though, right? It's like, because I was just looking at that draft. I'm like, oh, what, this draft, a COVID draft. It wasn't that great because we were just looking at the kid from Philadelphia who was just traded in the Duran trade. I'm like, oh, not a great draft. And I saw those two names. I'm like, oh, that's a pretty good one. But anyway, sorry. That was just a quick aside. My apologies.
No, I like it because it really makes you examine what's more valued. Because I think if you go back 15, 20 years ago, right, Rob, you'd probably say the dominant starting pitcher, the anchor, the ace to your rotation, which in today's age of modern baseball, it's shrinking in terms of what that actually means and the importance of it. There's so few guys that you can name on maybe one hand at this point that are true throwback 7-8 innings, 115, 120 pitches a start, and post a sub-3 ERA. Those guys just hardly exist anymore.
Yeah, and the problem is, too, is that because of the way that these guys are raised, I mean, and this is this generation of pitchers. I'm talking about, mid to late 20s. The way that these guys have all been raised in the same way now, which is max effort, power, 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 and then ultimately you're going to probably break down. And like Strider, obviously, this was a guy 2 years ago when you had this conversation, you say, oh, no, I'm not trading him for the world. No way. But this was, unfortunately for him, it happened. And unfortunately for a lot of pitchers, almost every pitcher, this is around the corner. I mean, Paul Skenes is awesome. It's great. But is anyone going to be shocked 3 years from now if we're sitting here? Because that's just the way it is. So I think what I'm saying is that I kind of agree with you. Because as good as these guys have been and are, you know that you're going to have to take your lumps somewhere along the road. And with a really good position player like Pete Crow Armstrong, I don't think you're going to ever have to take your lumps.
No, unless a freak injury, unless something like, unfortunately, what happens here in Atlanta with Acuna, where he's now got two bad knees. But the likelihood of something like that happening is very slim. And the guy that I would say is this generation's horse, even Rob, Garrett Cole, he's been out for the year.
Right. And think about this is that, I mentioned Strider, but you can talk about Cole. You can talk about all these guys. A couple of years ago when they're rolling, we're just saying, no, it's not going to happen to them. They're just going to keep on doing what they're doing. But I do think the teams internally, when they sign these deals, when Max Fried signs a deal, when Garrett Crochet signs a deal, internally, they almost have to build in somewhere along the way, they're going to have this bump in the road. They're going to have this year, lost year. And you hope it doesn't happen. I really hope it doesn't happen. I hope they figure this out. I hope that they find a way to manage this stuff, which is the conversation going back all the way back to last year. But until they do, I'm sorry. Like, this is just how it's happening. It keeps happening.
Well, and here's the thing before I let you go. The reason Max Fried is in New York and no longer here in Atlanta is because the Yankees gave him an 8-year contract, Rob. The
right.
Braves were never going to do that because of exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, and they know, the Yankees know the risk that they're inheriting, but they also know it's the cost of doing business. And, that's the unfortunate thing, and that's why that's why I think you're seeing a lot of these pitchers, especially college pitchers, being drafted more and more and more because this is their solution to it. This is their avenue to it. We're going to get these guys up to the majors quick. They're going to fill in the gap. They're going to be controllable guys because we know that it's going to get really uncomfortable for the high-end guys who are going to ask for a lot of money and then probably get hurt somewhere along the way. So, and that's what, coming back to the Braves, that's the challenge, right? I mean, and that's why I say when you're going out and getting a guy, you know, everybody wants the Dylan Cease, right? Everyone wants, but the cost of doing business for those guys is, as Freed pointed out, I mean, it's so crazy. So maybe it's just better to do something along the lines of what you did with Sale, to do something along the lines of what you did with Moore, and then figure it out from there. So, yeah, no easy solutions, but that's why we talk about it.
The funniest part about that, Rob, is to bring this all full circle here, the Braves tried to do that with A.J. Smith-Shawver, and he is now out for the year. So even when they tried to go that route of bringing up the young stud, he was pitching great, and now he needs Tommy John surgery. So
I know.
Of course,
I mean, isn't – you know, as a quick note to that, and this is probably a bigger conversation, but – it really is a generation. I'm feeling it's a generational thing where, you know, these kids that you're talking about, you know, whether it's 23 through 25 through 28, they are being trained a different way than the 35 to 40 year olds were. That's just a fact. And we don't have proof. It's like cell phones. Well, we don't know the impact cell phones. I don't know. But I do know this is that evidence is showing that that generation of pitchers are usually ending up pretty familiar, going down some familiar paths.
Yeah, it's really crazy. This is a good conversation, Rob. Appreciate you as always. We'll check out Baseball Isn't Boring, and we'll chat soon.
All right. Always good talking with you. I'll talk to you later.
All right. That is Rob Bradford, Odyssey MLB Insider. When we get back to close out the 7 o'clock hour, we'll let you hear from Mike Hughes. He was on with the morning shift. What did CB2 have to say about joint practices and a whole lot more? Don't go anywhere. It's Chris Thomas tonight. Really interesting stuff there with our buddy Rob Bradford. He's right. Pitchers are trained as specialists these days, and that's why we see so many more arm injuries. You're designated as a pitcher a lot earlier in your baseball life than you were back in the day. And the concentration on a singular sport also happens much more frequently than it did 20, 30 years ago. Even 15 years ago. Warren, I don't know about you. I played everything growing up. I at least tried everything. I wasn't good at much, but I at least tried everything. I tried soccer, basketball, baseball, football. I did shot put and track and field. So at least I got out there and I tried everything. Now it feels like kids are one sport athletes in like middle school, which is crazy. And that's why you get hurt.
I saw one of the little YouTube shorts today. They talked about there was a kid whose parents, he's 11 years old, and they got him Tommy John surgery. And I'm like, what?
Whoa. Whoa.
He had Tommy John surgery, and he was 11 years old. The worst thing I worried about health-wise at 11 years old was
chickenpox.
Yeah, an upset stomach or skinning my knee, like falling or something. I wasn't worried about Tommy John.
I feel like you're not even developed enough at 11 years old to have Tommy John. Like, you still got your child bones in there, man.
How does that happen? What are you doing with that child that at 11 years old, the UCL needs surgical work?
And that's the thing. Like, you would take a break from throwing a baseball because it would then turn to football season. You would take a break from ramming into each other because then it would be basketball season. You'd take a break from shooting over and over and over again because baseball season was starting back up again. That's how it used to be. But now, again, these quarterbacks are quarterbacks from the time they're 10 years old. And all they do is throw a football 1,000 times, and you wonder why their shoulders break down. These pitchers are pitchers from 11, 12 years old. It's just crazy. All right, we'll switch gears here. Mike Hughes joined the radio station. He joined the morning shift, and he talked about what's going on. Our CB2 exclusively right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. He joined the morning shift with Squid and Allie and Mike Johnson, and this was their conversation.
Cornerback Mike Hughes to the show. We're going to get into really, really deep about this practice. Obviously, a cool crossover, but just the Falcons as a whole, man. You obviously have been around a couple of different places, seem to have found a home here. What's the relationship like between you and not only Raheem, but a lot of the coaches and other guys like AJ?
The relationship's great, man. I'm a people's guy, I would like to say. So I'm big on, creating great relationships. And that's what this game allows us to do. We got people from all walks of life just coming together for one common goal. And it's always special to, be around the guys and being able to just, do whatever or talk about whatever, whether it's football or just about life. And those are the type of relationships that you can create for a lifetime outside of just the football building. But I would like to say my relationship with everybody is great, man. I think everybody likes me. That's what they say. But, I like everybody else. So it's been great.
I might hear a guy that's played inside and outside. And there's real differences. And some people think one's harder than the other. Walk us through the differences and which one you think is actually harder to play.
Probably nickel. It's really a glorified linebacker. They got to do a lot more communicating than a corner does. Corners we get feedback from the other positions on adjustments that we might need to do sometimes. But for the most part, we're out there on the island. So it's probably more physically demanding, difficult in that aspect. But as far as like communication and assignment, nickel is probably way harder.
And when you say you're out there on an island, how hard is it at times if you feel like you maybe be a step behind to trust your technique and not kind of panic out there?
It's just all about like you really trusting your technique, just not trying anything new, doing what you practice and trying to perfect that, and just having the mindset of just bringing it every play. You can't fall asleep out there, because as soon as you do, the ball's in the air, and if you're not ready, then everybody knows how that goes at corner. So just not being able to fall asleep, trusting your technique, and just being confident.
Cornerback Mike Hughes joining us here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. To follow up on that, talk to us a little bit about the relationship with yourself and a guy like Billy Bowman. Obviously, he's been brought in, I think, like you're talking about, glorified linebacker. He's been asked to do some of that box stuff. He looks built for it. I mean, he looks like he's enjoying himself out here. He's having a good camp so far. But obviously, you're a guy that playing, a number of spots. You can shed some light on that for him.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I can speak for all the rookies. They've come in with the mindset of just work. And that's all you can ask for. And they've taken bits and pieces of what we've given them and just trying to add it to being a pro, and just trying to teach them how to be a pro. And they've done a great job so far. And like I said, all you can ask for them is to come out here and work and just perfect their craft. And everything else will fall into place. Like, I always tell them, like, you got drafted for a reason. It's hard to make it to the league, so being able to stay and find your footing is also another thing too. So just trying to help them in that aspect, just being a pro, and like I said, just bringing it every day, making sure you're doing anything to help the team.
We are joined by Mike Hughes on the Morning Shift. I like to ask the fun questions. So I know we're in the thick of training camp right now. We just had our first crossover practice, but what did you do in the off season?
So I closed on a house in LA. I've been working on that for a while. That's why I usually go and train in the off season. So closed on a house, I was dealing with that pretty much the majority of the off season. But just being around family, I'm a family guy. And just kind of, having fun, really. Whether it's bowling or jet skiing, I like the jet ski. I know it's dangerous, but I'm pretty good at it, so shouldn't be no worries. But having fun and really just spending time with family.
And who are you rooming with out here?
With D. Alford, AJ, and Clark Phillips.
Who's controlling the music right now?
In the dorm room?
Yeah.
Honestly, whenever we're in there to sleep. So whenever I go into everybody's rooms, it's closed. Everybody's kind of in their own world. We see each other all day here. So once we get over there, it's pretty much sleep time. So that's how that goes.
Joined by Mike Hughes on the Morning Shift. I want to get back to the jet ski. What kind of jet ski you got?
What's the name of it? Do you know any brands?
I just know that, the I think Kawasaki makes one. Was it Sea-Doo makes one?
Sea-Doo. I got two Sea-Doos.
Wow. Yep.
Two Sea-Doo, the trick bike ones.
You like getting out there early in the morning or late at night when it's glass out there, right?
You talking about like when it's calm?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the best. When it's pretty rough, that's when you got to be real careful. But like you said, when it's glass, that's when you can kind of have fun with it. So.
All right, I'll go back to football real quick. How hard is it in today's game with the CBA where you guys don't practice tackling a lot? How hard is it to stay crisp on that tackling? Because you said earlier on island, and a lot of times you are, and if the guy gets the ball, you got to make the play.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So we got this thing called thud, and pretty much you do the same thing as if you're about to tackle somebody, you just don't bring them down. So as much as we can, we try to emphasize that. And I mean, it's really no other way to really get prepared for it. I guess the pro thud that we usually use is kind of how we get ourselves ramped up to do the real thing. But other than tackling for real, it's like, you know what I mean? You can't. Right. You got to get in the game and then see how you do. So
finishing up here with cornerback Mike Hughes. Look, I can't let you go without at least asking you about today's practice and some of the matchups you had out here against the Tennessee Titans. Anybody stick out? I know that you know, we joke around Falcons legend Calvin Ridley over there, but anybody stick out? What was one of your favorite matchups today, and how do you feel like the defense did?
Obviously, you know, really sticks out. I was ready to go against Cam Ward, see what he has. And I think he'll have a long, good career, just based off of what I've seen and his confidence level. He's out there talking a little bit. So, yeah, I enjoyed that. And, you know, they got a bunch of young guys over there that I'm not really too familiar with, but they got, you know, some skill set that you got to pay attention to when you're out there. So it was some pretty fun matchups, though. Obviously, like I said, Calvin Ridley and Cam Ward were definitely at the top of my list.
All right, that's cornerback Mike Hughes joining us here on the morning shift. Thanks so much, man. Good luck this year.
Good stuff there from CB2. When we get back, we're going to let you hear from Miles Garrett, who joined me a little bit earlier in the show. He was boots on the ground today. Fight day at training.